Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. Here at newsounds.org, we still can't have live guests in our studios, so for these Soundcheck podcasts, we're doing a mix of remote performances and some memorable sessions from our archives. This is one of the latter, and for this one, we take you back to 2016. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It can be hard to place Angelica Garcia's songs in time. This one, called Little Bird, joins a centuries-old list of ballads about leaving home. Garcia's debut album, Medicine for Birds, is full of gothic storytelling and swampy, blues-inflected rock. Sounds like it just as easily could have come from, say, 1970 as from September. Angelica has brought her band into our studio. They're going to play some of her songs for us. Beginning with one called Bridge on Fire, here's Angelica Garcia live on Soundcheck.
Stop her.
Very nice. Angelica Garcia and her band live here in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Bridge on Fire, which you will find on her debut album called Medicine for Birds. Angelica singing and playing the guitar, Corey Axt behind the keyboards, Andrew Carper playing bass, doing some backing vocals, Andrew Sisk behind our drum kit. Angelica, nice to see you.
Hey, great to see you.
Congratulations on this record. It's a very kind of assured debut, it seems to me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Despite the opening seconds of the record, which is you off mic saying, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, personally, I was like, what better way to start something and be like, all right, I'm just going to be honest here.
Right.
We're just messing around.
Well, and that's the opening track is Little Bird, which we heard a little bit of at the top there.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the sound of a young woman. She talks about being about to turn 23 and leaving home, tell my mother not to come in. So was that ripped from the headlines of Angelica Garcia's diaries, or is that really just a character?
I was actually about to say, fun fact, I just turned 23. I was like, so this is the day I was talking about.
Right.
I guess I feel pretty good. I don't know if all of my fears have gone away, though, but...
Well, now, the story is you grew up in East L.A.
Yeah, east of East L.A.
And then moved to Eastern Virginia.
Yes.
Which is same country, but I would imagine a completely different world.
I would say it's different from L.A. in probably every conceivable way. Yeah.
So were these songs kind of a working out of some kind of culture shock?
Yeah. I mean, it was a huge culture shock for me. And especially since, like, I was still a teenager when we first moved over. Just graduated high school. Didn't have any friends. And the median age on the Eastern Shore is generally, like, about 60 because a lot of folks, like, come down to retire there.
Uh-huh.
So there weren't really any people my age either, except maybe, like, one or two that I had nothing in common with, of course, because I'm a weird musician. But it was pretty crazy, and I kind of decided to make the best of it and sit there and think, like, well, like, look at this place. It's totally different from everything I'm used to. That's awesome. And it's good to be around that and good to be challenged that way sometimes. And so I wrote by myself.
There are at least two songs on the record that mention magnolia trees.
Mm-hmm.
So is that like part of the flora of Eastern Virginia?
Yeah. The Eastern Shore attaches Maryland to like Southern Virginia. So it's gorgeous. You have the Chesapeake Bay on one side and then the Atlantic coast on the other side. And so some people know it best when you think of Chincoteague Island, like the Chincoteague ponies.
Yeah.
I've seen a pony in real life.
Really?
It's pretty cool.
So they still live there?
Oh, yeah. They're running that place.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Literally, too.
So when you moved there, you were already sort of identifying as a musician, you knew that's what you wanted to do?
Oh, yeah. For high school, I went to the LA County High School for the Arts, and I did, like, classical voice, and then I did jazz voice for 2 years.
Mm.
So
okay.
I was definitely, like, working, doing music all the time, at least, like, at home and at school.
Well, what was the music of the family growing up? You know, what was the music in the house?
Yeah, it's an interesting mix of stuff, because I grew up, when I was a very young child, with my mom and my grandparents. So there was a lot of, like, mariachi music and ranchero music, so Mexican folk music all over the house. That's the first stuff I learned to sing when I was a child. And when I was about 5 years old, my mom, who did mariachi but also was a Spanish pop singer, she married my stepdad, who was a Tulsa and Austin and Nashville music guy. You know, so it might be a little weird, like Angelica Garcia, but I'm like singing like bluesish or countryish kind of stuff. But it's like my stepdad was one that was like, "Hey, here's Willie Nelson, and here's Neil Young, and here's Bob Dylan," and so a lot of things that you don't necessarily get when you grow up in El Monte. You know, like you have to kind of find it your own way.
But it's one thing to find it. It's another thing to make it your own, which is, you know, what you've done on this record, it seems.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, honestly, one thing that I say sometimes is, like, my mom taught me how to sing, but my dad taught me, like, what to listen to.
Mm.
And it was through my stepdad's influence that I found my love for lyrics and writing and then I kind of like merged that with the things that I found on my own, like in high school and stuff like that, like the White Stripes, all that stuff that.
Not such a big gap between, you know, some of that early stuff that your stepdad introduced you to and the White Stripes. You know, Jack White is coming from that. I mean, a lot of these songs sound to me like they could have been on Led Zeppelin 3, which was...
Well, that's awesome. Carper just got really excited. Yeah.
This next one, for example, The Devil Can Get In, this is kind of like playing with a folk music trope that goes back centuries.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I was, the day that I wrote this song, like, I was going through this moment where I was listening to so much Mississippi John Hurt. And, you know, make me a pallet on your floor, you know. And the house that I lived in on the Eastern Shore was actually the rectory for the St. James Church. So that building was like at least 200 years old. And so it just has all these vibes
like
in it.
Stained glass and stuff like that.
Not in the house. But it is like very like little winding staircases, little secret doors and latches, old original fireplace in it. You can actually like stand in it if you wanted to. And all of those little vibes, they you pick up on it after a while.
Well, let's hear another one of the results. You want to play the song for us?
Sure. It's actually, if I could say, it's got a little twist in it this time.
Okay.
So we're doing part of how you would hear it on the album, and then part is a little surprise.
Okay, heading to Parts Unknown then. Angelica Garcia and her band performing here in the Soundcheck studio. This song is called The Devil Can Get In, and it comes from Angelica Garcia's debut album, Medicine for Birds. Here's a live performance in the Soundcheck studio.
Crowbar to break away the door. No, he don't need a blueprint of your house's first floor. Oh, and he don't need a window, even if it's left ajar. The devil can get in when your room is locked. The devil can get in. Can get in when your room is light.
Hey!
Ooh, 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 ooh. TV, no propaganda on the screen. He don't need a cold or a killing machine. Oh, all he needs a fragile and impressionable heart. The devil can get in when you're
I
Once again, Angelica Garcia and the band live here in the Soundcheck studio with a version of The Devil Can Get In. You'll find a version of that on the record, Medicine for Birds, although it sounds a little different from what we just heard here in the studio. Little detour to New Orleans, it sounded like,
yeah,
there. And Angelica, you were mentioning before that, you know, Andrew Carper,
yes,
bass player, was getting all excited when I mentioned Led Zeppelin 3.
Oh, yes.
Corey Axt, behind the keyboard, got all excited when he saw our Steinway, our piano.
Oh,
so that,
yeah.
That,
yeah.
That
I don't
color
know.
Is dead. That instrumental color was definitely there in that version of the song.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
On the record, the kind of slow bluesy shuffle that we hear at the beginning, that's the song on the record. Obviously, you've worked up a different arrangement. Also on the record, it's preceded by a kind of a spoken word piece.
Yes.
Called Tangerine.
Tangerine. It's a pontoon.
A what?
It's a pontoon.
Oh.
Yeah. I was actually taking a writing class at the community college on the Eastern Shore. Shout out to my English teacher. But we were going through the poetry.
Right. And what is the form of the pontoon?
The pontoon, I haven't looked it up in a while. I think for every subsequent stanza, there's one line that you take out of the previous
one. And then you pull back into the,
Yeah, and then it's the final stanza has like one line from each stanza in the whole poem. I don't know. I thought it was very cool, and it was almost like chant-like.
Yes.
I actually wrote that for my English class, and I was like, man, I like this. I want to like put it somewhere.
Wait a minute. You put homework on your debut album?
I know. Well, that was actually pretty funny. My teacher was so cool about it too for the writing class. Like everybody had to turn in like a final writing project, and some people did short stories, some people did poetry, and I was like, is there any way I could like write lyrics? And she was like, the only way I'll accept that is if you give me like full demos of each song too.
Wow. So. So speaking of the songs, I mean, a lot of them are told from the point of view of women, young women, who tend to be very kind of self-possessed or sarcastic or, you know, very clear-eyed about what's going on around them, the relationships that they're in. And there's also a song called Loretta Lynn. So there's a kind of, I don't know if feminism is the right word, but there's definitely a kind of, you know, a strong women's element to the songwriting, it seems.
Well, hey, thanks. Honestly, I felt like, I don't know. I guess I wanted to try to tell these stories from a different perspective, and like I knew that the perspective that I knew best in a certain situation was probably mine, and I don't know. Sorry. And
is Loretta Lynn a kind of a, you know, an icon for you?
You know what's so funny with that song is like I was listening to Loretta Lynn one day, like I was listening to Fifth City or something, and I was like, man, Loretta, if there's one thing we got in common, we don't like the last person we were talking to. So this one's for you, you know? And then Dad took me to go visit Nashville, too, a few times. And he loves, like, telling me the history of everything. This building was this. And we walked past the Ryman Auditorium, which used to be where the Opry was.
The Grand Ole Opry,
yeah, and right across the alley, there's Tootsie's, the bar right there, that he told me that all the Opry legends used to come in through the alley and go to the backs of the bars. And so I kind of just envisioned sitting at Tootsie's having a drink with Loretta or something.
Yeah.
You know?
And when you were writing these songs, you were writing them at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did you write these songs on?
They were all GarageBand demos. Very, very pro. Hard. I say that very sarcastically.
Yes, yeah.
But I didn't even have a real recording microphone. I was just actually singing through like the Skype microphone to do all of these demos. But in a way, like when you're working from very limited resources like that, it forces you to really push yourself creatively and to come up with different ways of doing things. Like, oh, I don't have a drum kit. I'm just going to take this pen and hit it on things until I find the right sound that I like. It was a little weird. Sometimes you would hear like crickets and dogs or chickens or whatever the hell was around the church house at the time.
I would be very curious to hear some of these demos.
Yeah, I'll email you some.
The pen on the shoebox and the chickens in the background.
Yeah, they're pretty funny. Yeah. A couple ones you even have like my mom yelling at me like, hey, move your car, you know, like
Well, obviously, somebody heard something in them because here they are, all done up proper on the record.
The album's
called Medicine for Birds. It is the debut from Angelica Garcia. Now, do you say Angelica or do you say Angelica?
I say Angelica, but other fun fact, my mom is also an Angelica, so she goes by Angelica.
Right.
So technically, we have the same name because I'm a junior. So it's not incorrect to call me Angelica.
But you say Angelica.
Yeah, I tend to just say Angelica.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so let's hear another song. You want to do Orange Flower next?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. Angelica Garcia rejoining the rest of the band here in the Soundcheck studio. Here's Orange Flower live on Soundcheck. Angelica Garcia with Orange Flower. snarky little number from her debut CD called Medicine for Birds. Live performance with Angelica playing guitar and singing, Corey Axt on keyboards, Andrew Carper on bass, Andrew Sisk behind our drum kit here in the Soundcheck studio. Angelica, there's a song late in the record called Red Moon Rising.
Yes.
Which has some Spanish in it.
Yes.
Have you ever written a song en español?
Never. You know what? No, I've never done a full one. One of my exercises for new music that I've been doing is I've been doing more Spanglish, kind of like the way I would talk to my cousins, I guess, right. You know. But I'm second gen on one side, first gen on my dad's side. Whenever I was at my grandmother's house, she would always be like, you have to speak Spanish with me. But my cousins never wanted to. So it was like this strange thing of like, sometimes it was full Spanish, sometimes it's half. And
right.
I don't know. But I've definitely been writing more that way recently.
And do you get into the world of corridos and rancheras and boleros and things like that?
Yeah, you know what? I know that in recent demos, I've been experimenting a lot with, like, Latin beats and, like, maybe more percussive melodies or the classic ranchero, like...
Lola Beltran kind of thing.
Yeah, or even, like, the harmonies that are just, like, the always perfect third over each other. I think the best part about making music is, like, that each album is like a chapter, you know? And so Medicine for Birds is like this chapter of the South, and who knows what the next chapter is going to be, but we're kind of seeing it piece by piece once in a while.
Yeah. Well, terrific record, Angelica. Thank you so much for coming in and playing some of
Thank
it for us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us all. Grandmothers from El Salvador, but we all grew up east of L.A. And cocoa water's more plentiful than rain. Grandma says I got a cactus stem nailed to the top of my head. But she says not to worry, the Virgin Mary likes me that way.
That soundcheck session came from our archives. You can hear lots more and check out our newly produced remote sessions on our website, newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, our producer, Karen Havlick, and I'm John Schaefer.